Well, Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach is asking the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights to investigate four Kansas school districts for suspected failure to comply with the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. In a letter to the Secretary of Education, Kobach wrote that Kansas City USD USD 500, Olathe USD 223, Shawnee Mission 512, and Topeka 501 have policies that allow or require teachers to conceal from parents information concerning the social transitioning of their children. Unbelievable. You'd think this was California. With us now to explain exactly what's going on is our Attorney General, Chris Kobach. General, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Great to be with you, John. Yeah, it's amazing that we have four of the largest high schools in Kansas with official policies that require the teachers to conceal from parents or allow them to conceal. In some cases, they're required. In some cases, they're allowed to conceal from parents. The transitioning of their children, of the children. And, you know, this is the ultimate example of schools trying to place themselves in the shoes of a parent and, you know, do a better job of parenting than we parents actually do in their eyes. And it's just absolutely astonishing to me that we have this problem in Kansas.
I don't understand how it's legal for these districts to conceal this from parents, but More than that, I just think that this is, I saw their responses. You know, one of the districts kind of blew you off. Another one was just flippantly, frankly, insulting in their response to you. I mean, how are these districts responding to this?
Well, it varies. Now, this follows from a letter that I sent to six school districts about a year and a half ago, and two school districts, as soon as we informed them that they had these policies, because remember, sometimes a superintendent or faculty will adopt a policy and the school board doesn't even know about it. Anyway, two of them said, oh, really? Okay, we'll change it immediately. But these last four have said, no, we're going to keep our policies, even though we informed them that it violates a federal statute and it violates the parents' constitutional right to control the upbringing of their children. And this has been recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court since 1925, and it was just re-recognized in an opinion about 3 weeks ago, coming out of Texas, a U.S. Supreme Court opinion, that parents do, in fact, have the right to control the upbringing of their children, especially anything that touches upon faith values and other values like those that are derived from faith, and certainly the whole trans issue touches upon that. So there is a constitutional right these schools are infringing upon, these districts are infringing upon, and there is a federal statutory right they are violating as well. And we are informing them that, hey, they need to change these policies. But amazingly, these four districts seem to be saying, no, we're not going to do that. And so, you know, really, it's down to parents and putting political pressure on them, if not the U.S. Department of Education, which, again, we have contacted the U.S. Department of Education saying, you know, look, this is what these districts are doing. We've advised them they're breaking the law and violating constitutional rights to parents. And, you know, the U.S. Department of Education may use whatever funding levers they have to, you know, nudge the school districts back into compliance with the Constitution.
And I'm assuming that's what you're hoping will then happen, is that the Department of Education will say, okay, comply, or we'll cut off the purse strings, correct?
Yeah, and I think that would be the easiest way to bring the recalcitrant school districts into line. But it's amazing that we even have to fight.
Right, I was just going to say that. It's sad that you have to go that far.
Yes. It's just nonsensical, especially here in Kansas, where we have so much going right. And let's not, you know, overstate it. These are only four very large school districts, but only four school districts. There are hundreds of school districts that are doing things just right and not infringing upon the rights of the parents like this.
And is it any surprise, though, where they are? Topeka,
no.
Kansas City, Topeka, or excuse me, Kansas City, Kansas City, Kansas City. I mean, it's...
and Topeka. Yeah. No, it's not really surprising, unfortunately.
we're talking with Attorney General Chris Kobach. I wanted to ask you about it. It's not related necessarily to you. I mean, well, I guess it is because of the cases that you handle. But we've seen so many, and you've handled, you know, cases at the district court level and at the Supreme Court level. You've argued in multiple cases before the Supreme Court. But I want to ask you about what we've seen lately with these activist district court judges and their nationwide injunctions. Did you ever think that it would get so bad that we would have so many of these activist judges putting out these nationwide injunctions? It's gotten obscene under this president.
Yeah, I saw this coming because we started to see nationwide injunctions, way back during the very early years. Actually, even before the Trump administration, the first one is probably in the 1980s. The Supreme Court talks about this in their recent opinion, but they were very few and far between. Where a district court, so you're talking about a federal district court for one state or a portion of one state, says we are striking down this federal statute, federal regulation, or federal policy for the whole country, even though the judge only has jurisdiction in that one state. And so the idea that you could use these really gained traction on the left, and there are a number of district judges who are way on the left side of the spectrum. Now, to be fair, there are some district judges who are very conservative and, you know, I think hold the appropriate view of the Constitution, which is the originalist view that you interpret it according to the intentions and the view of the words that was used by the people who wrote the words. But at any rate, the judge shopping by the left allowed them to go to judges in San Francisco, in New York, and in Hawaii, those being the three, you know, biggest targets of the left, find a judge, you know, go to a district where all of the judges are hard left, and then ask for a nationwide injunction. So this one, you know, left-leaning progressive judge who's an activist, meaning outside of his judicial role, he'd like to legislate for the whole country, he renders a decision and shuts down an entire policy. And they really aggressively went after the first Trump administration seeking nationwide injunctions, and now they're doing it against the second Trump administration. And so it's great that the Supreme Court has stepped in, but I don't think we're completely out of the woods yet on this, because we just saw another left-leaning judge issue another nationwide injunction just a few days after right. The Supreme Court said no more of these nationwide injunctions.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because the Supreme Court made their ruling and yet another one just did it. So clearly they're going to have eventually the court's going to have to rule again and be a little more clear with their intent, despite what Ketanji Brown Jackson seems to think.
Well, and you know, I think this shows how important it is in our federalist model of judicial selection to really screen these judges carefully.
Yeah,
I mean, there are so many former ACLU activist attorneys who are now sitting on the bench in district courts all across the country, including one that I argued opposite in defending our Kansas law on election security a few years ago. He's now a sitting judge in the Southern District of New York. They constantly, the Democrats in Congress and in the White House are very good at identifying these hyper lefty lawyers and then elevating them to the federal bench.
I wanted to ask you real quick, and I know we've got to let you run. Your office recently had a big win in a case involving the new Kansas law banning foreign money for campaigns. You talked about it yesterday at the KSRA annual meeting. Can you kind of give us a little insight into that before you run?
Yeah, the Kansas legislature this past year passed a great statute that says when you have referendum campaigns on our, you know, in Kansas, in order to amend the Constitution, you have to have a referendum after the legislature passes the amendment by a 2/3 majority. And the legislature said no foreign money. You can't, if you are going to spend money to advocate for one side or the other in a Kansas constitutional referendum, and we have a big one coming up, as I say, in August of next year on judicial selection, you can't take foreign money and spend foreign money, you know, buying TV and radio ads in Kansas. And it's perfectly legal for the state legislature to do so. And we defended that law, and we just won against the plaintiffs who are claiming that that law violates their rights. And, you know, it's the very essence of self-determination. We in America get to decide our own government for ourselves. And someone from another country cannot come in and spend millions of dollars trying to change what we in Kansas decide we the people want in our Constitution. And the legislature passed a very good statute, and we had success in defending it. So it was a good week.
This was particularly egregious during Value Them Both, wasn't it? There was some, like, wasn't there like hundreds of millions of dollars, a massive chunk of money that came in from overseas in that campaign?
Hundreds of thousands. I don't think
hundreds of thousands. That's right. Yeah.
But yes, there did appear to be a substantial amount of foreign money being spent in that campaign. But you know, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's even if it had never happened before.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
We should have every right to say, look, it's only U.S. money, and we're not even limiting it to money. You know, to money inside of Kansas. But you just got to be an American citizen if you're going to fund a campaign in the state of Kansas regarding our constitutional amendments.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, and you're right. I don't have a problem if someone, I mean, I don't like the idea that Hollywood liberals are, because they did that too during Value Them Both, but at least they're Americans. Yes. So
absolutely.
General,
can I share?
Yes, please.
Before I go, can I share some good news?
Please.
Yeah, the good news, which my dogs are barking about too, is that we just had our crime statistics for calendar year 2024 come out. And Kansans will be happy to know that we are the safest in the past 20 years. We have the lowest crime rate in 20 years, 23 offenses per 1,000 people. And that's down from 27. Really, really low crime in Kansas. And it's been dropping for the last few years, 26% decrease in murders, 13% decrease in property crimes. So great news in the state of Kansas. We are doing some things right. And I'm particularly pleased as Kansas chief law enforcement officer to report that things are going so well.
Well, and I think that's in large part to the folks that we have on the ground, the law enforcement, our county sheriffs, our PDs, our police, and you and Tony Mativi and some of the folks that we have at the state level as well. So thank you.
Yeah, that's right. I certainly can't take all the credit. The credit really is due, I think, first and foremost to the locals, the sheriffs and the deputies who are out there making arrests and enforcing the law. But there's no question that at KBI, the direction comes from the top, and our efforts to crack down on fentanyl and other crimes have had an effect, too. So it's a shared triumph for law enforcement across Kansas and for the people of Kansas generally, because, crime rates also are part of our social culture. And we have a no tolerance for crime attitude in Kansas, and I think that's a great thing.
Well, and think, it wasn't too long ago that you and I were on this show talking about retail theft, and look how that number has dropped, for example.
Exactly. Yeah, that too. The legislature gave my office authority to prosecute organized retail crime. We started doing so, and organized retail crime has come down. So all kinds of crimes are dropping in Kansas, and we're at the lowest crime rate we've seen in the past 20 years. So that's good news. And we should all feel a little safer when we walk around in Kansas, that knowing that we are a very safe state to live in.
General, if folks want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
If they want to connect on, any political matters, my campaign for reelection is chriskobach.com, chriskobach.com. If they want to just, check into the office and see any of our press releases, any of the court cases that we're reporting to the public, the results, that's ag.ks.gov. Again, AG for Attorney General, .ks.gov. And also, if you go to that second, if you have any experience being ripped off, there's a lot of fraudsters right now trying to text you fraudulent messages. And one of the big ones that's going around right now is claiming that you owe money and that you might be arrested, or that you have taken too long to pay some sort of fine.
I've seen that. I got that text, actually.
Yes. They're going around all over the place. If you think you've been defrauded, go to that website, ag.ks.gov. We've got a great consumer protection division that can give you guidance. And if you've lost some money, may actually be able to help you recover it, depending on the circumstances. So want to make sure people know about that. Great, great resource for Kansans to have.
General, thank you again. Please give my regards to your lovely wife and your daughters.
Will do. Good speaking with you, John.